So today, I'm going to tell you a Nancy story. Haven't done that in a while. Sometimes they sneak up, and after all, sometimes that seems to be the only thing I have to say. But this story, I think, has something, at least in my heart, to do with what the Buddha was trying to teach us in that parable. It's a story about a night a few years ago when I finally said goodbye to stuff I didn't need to carry anymore. So I was driving this night, it was a Thursday, I think, and I was going from here to some far distant Maryland suburbs, the kind that have 10,000 cars between me and them, and that take a million years to get there. That's only a small exaggeration. It was dark, and there were all those cars, all of them going in similar directions, all of them trying to get home or away from home or towards something, and I was driving to a church. As usual, to a church. And on this particular evening, I was driving toward a meeting of leaders from several congregations. It was a meeting that I was to run, in which there would be at least a dozen people in attendance, most of them at least the age of my parents, and all of them waiting for me to arrive and call them to order and have something intelligent to say. I was not looking forward to it. The rain smeared my windshield and all the other cars streamed by, and I was going to this place to tell these people that we could, as Unitarian Universalists, get together and grow our faith and yada, yada, yada. I had papers and research. I had an agenda. I had all the tools and the talk of my trade. And I was tired, and it was late. And while the rain and the other cars kept pushing me steadily onward, suddenly it hit me that right then, driving to a meeting of almost entirely upper-middle-class white professionals, wearing my creased trousers, ready with my words of inspiration, it occurred to me that something had happened when I wasn't paying attention, something I didn't notice really until that moment. I had become a yuppie. Correct, friends, a yuppie? And not just any yuppie, but a Washington, D.C., church-going, PC-talking, salary-earning, Protestant do-gooder yuppie wearing trousers and a hat that matched my coat. I had become a purposeful do-gooder in pressed pants. And friends, I have not always been that person. And suddenly I wanted to cry because I was afraid. Who was I? This person who only a few brief years before was barely older than a teenager in a small Indiana town where nobody's hat matched their coat, where young people spent their nights on rusty boats in the Ohio River drinking cheap beer and not in rain-slicked cars commuting insane distances to go be inspirational. A few years before, I was at home in a place whose denizens pulled catfish right out of mud banks with nothing but gloves, and everybody ate rhubarb, and most people watched NASCAR, and not a few smoked Marlboro Reds right out of the hard pack. Who was I? And who would these people, whom I had not so long ago shared these rusty boats and these cheap beers with, who would they see me as? Would they recognize me now with my papers and my agendas and my trousers? Who was I? And where was that distant, receding self that I had been? Where had she gone? That person I was, so that I could be me? And where were the places and the people that filled her life? I remember that my hands actually started shaking on the steering wheel. I remember thinking that I might not be able to go to that meeting and stand up in front of those church leaders and be this person. And the car seemed to guide itself on that rain-slicked night, not to the church I was headed toward, but to a gas station on some random side street in the suburbs. So I got out, I dried my eyes, I walked into the gas station convenience store, and I did the only thing I knew to do that could help me just once remember. I bought myself a hard pack of Marlboro Reds. And I smoked one. I lit it off a match that I was carrying with me to light the chalice. And I breathed in every sickening and lovely ounce of that redneck air, savoring the smell, remembering the places where I had known such smells before, knowing that right in that minute, if any of you had driven by and seen me there clutching a cigarette under a gas station awning, you would have soiled your pants in surprise. It was fabulous and noxious. And of course it made me sick. Don't think this is an advertisement for cigarette smoking, but in that moment, it was a tribute, I guess. It was a lingering glance back at the river I had crossed and the raft of family and friends that had gotten me across it. It was a statement, a solitary ember in the dark that reminded me of who I had been and who I had loved, of versions of myself that might have been. It was smoke rising like hillbilly incense up into the night air in a prayer of thanksgiving. It was a reminder that it was okay to say goodbye and that I can move on and be not what I might have been, but what I have chosen to be. And I went to that meeting feeling all dangerous, like I had a secret, eschewing all breath mints just because I could. And I pulled out my agendas, and I told them about growing our faith, and I did just fine. And when I got home, I put those cigarettes in my freezer, just in case I needed to remember again. And eventually I threw them out, much to my husband's pleasure, because I'd finally moved on. I knew that while those long nights on the Ohio River and my faraway friends with their ways so distant from my do-gooder suburban life had created me, I was not and would never be that person again. I could not attach myself to a memory because in truth I had become something new. I hadn't exactly renounced who I had been, but I had allowed who I was to shift and change, and I didn't need to carry those places and those people or that faded identity around with me on my back anymore, nor the guilt that so often comes with changing. So far, anyway, since letting that go, I've always been a little more comfortable in my skin, and it turns out I'm not as much of a raging yuppie as I thought. I just had to say goodbye with a Marlboro Red and a last lingering look. I had to say goodbye to who I might have been and to all those who helped make me who I actually am. Friends, even the things we love, even that which created us, even the very culture from which we arise, the beliefs we once held dear, the people we once knew, the smells we once smelled, even the people we once were, and the clarity we once had, even this, oh my friends, even all of this is but a raft that guided us across whatever rivers have met us along our way. Even all of this, even our most precious memories, we cannot cling to because it seems we must ever be busy turning corners, and we must leave some things behind. We must create ourselves anew, even if that means abandoning those things that have gotten us so very far. And we are asked to cross some very frightening rivers in the course of our lives, aren't we? Such torrents that we could never make it across with just our own arms and legs alone. Such torrents so powerful that we need everything that is available to buoy us up and give us strength. Now the river I crossed back home in Indiana, the river that my upbringing helped me to traverse, was nothing so big. It was just good old-fashioned adolescence. But there are so many more rivers, so much more frightening than that. Some of us are in the middle of them now. How, after all, do we cross from the treacherous shore of pain into the safety of recovery? How do we cross from heartbreak to wholeness? How do we cross from self-loathing over into an awareness of our innate blessedness? How do we stop being so afraid? Learn to speak with our own voice. Feel safe again in a world that's so often uncertain. How do we ever get from here, when here is anything but where we need to be, to there, when there is at least a new beginning? Often, so often, we stand in our lives on one or many of these treacherous shores. We look toward the safety that lies on the other side, and we have just enough courage to reach out and find what is available. Whatever leaves and twigs and doctrines and people are at hand, and bind them together into a raft of hope that moves us over, that gets the job done, that takes us where we must go. We grab what truth is near at hand and we make our way. Perhaps you have crossed many such rivers. Perhaps you have traveled waters you never thought you'd make it across. And what was your raft? What was it that got you through? What is it that gets you through now? Perhaps you grabbed a hold of family, of the people you knew best and that you knew loved you unconditionally. Perhaps with them holding you, you made it. Perhaps you grabbed a hold of work and the sense of purpose it gave you, or romantic love and the vision that it lent to life, or righteous indignation that gave you the strength to go on. Maybe you reached out and held on to a philosophy, an article of faith, a god or gods, or representative thereof, whose love made you whole again. Maybe you reached out and this church caught you, as it has caught so many, holding them up in arms of loving community. I don't know what you grabbed a hold of or what you're holding on to this minute or what's getting you through, but I know that if you're making it, if you're getting to the other side, your raft is probably just fine. It's probably the right one, at least for now. And holding on might be the best and only thing to do. But what of the other side? What happens when we get there? When finally, after struggling for so long, we're safe and we're ready for the next step? What happens to our philosophies then? What happens to our underpinnings, the things of which we were once so certain? When we get across the river, what happens to what we hold so close today? There once was a wise and overeager student who asked the Buddha if his teaching was true, with a capital T. If the wisdom that he gave to his students was the teaching, the way of life, the answer, and the Buddha told his followers with humble wisdom, "Oh, my friends, even this view, which is so pure and so clear, if you cling to it, if you fondle it, if you treasure it, if you are attached to it, then you do not understand that the teaching is similar to a raft, which is for crossing over and not for getting hold of." Oh, friends, even this. even that which you love, even this church and this moment and the things that get you through today are not for getting a hold of, but a raft for getting across. What you need so deeply today may not be exactly what you need tomorrow, certainly not in the same way. The question remains always lingering. Do each of us have the courage to leave the beloved raft behind us and go onward toward the unknown? This applies so very deeply to our religious lives. For we want us to cross the chasm more often and more readily than our faith, or as the case may be, our precious lack of faith. The answers that we've found to life's most important questions, or in fact the non-answers that we've come to know as truth, these are surely rafts that guide us and keep us afloat. Like the teaching of the Buddha, they are the light that guides us and the wisdom that sorts out the world. But it is one thing to hold a belief and another thing entirely to cling to it as if it is the only answer, only wisdom for you. The only way, the unwavering capital T truth that can never and will never change. Even that which is pure and clear and which you believe with your whole heart, if you cling to it, if you fondle it, if you treasure it above all else and attach your very identity to it such that you are no longer free to explore, even that becomes an impediment. In faith, as in life, we are often called to leave behind much that we have loved, much that we have been sure of, in favor of what our faith is asking us to become. Faith is no static thing. It's not a monolithic structure that never changes and can move along with us on our backs for as long as we live. It is rather perhaps a series of rafts and a series of rivers, a set of answers to a set of questions, ever evolving, if only we have the courage to evolve with it. Even the teachings of the Buddha, that pure light to which he gave his life, he said was only a raft to get us through. Even that, what he saw as the sum of all wisdom, the Buddha freely admitted, was not an end in itself, but just an implement by which the journey could go on. Even our dearest beliefs are not ends in themselves, but just implements of what is to come. The real question then for me has something to do with whether or not we can let go of that certainty, let go of that safety, and dare to be unsure again. To imagine that all of our answers just might be places to start, not places to end. I shared with you my little story of letting go just as an example from the journey I know best. Your own life is rich with examples of your own. The rivers you have crossed, the means by which you have crossed them, the rafts you held on to in order to get here. What then is the real question for you? What must you abandon on this safe side of the river? What must you hold on to with all your might? What are you capable of doing without your precious raft? And what are you unnecessarily lugging around on your long-suffering and weary back? Might you let it go, or at least stop clinging to it as if it were the only way? Life can be, indeed is, a bittersweet journey. May we think with gratitude of all those people, those places, those philosophies, and those sureties that have gotten us across. May we honor them for all that they are, and may we honor them even more when the time is right, by setting them down and moving forward. Until, of course, we come in time to the inevitability of the next river, and the next raft, and the next crossing, and the next bittersweet goodbye. Thus unencumbered, may we move forward, and see what lies around the corner, just waiting for us to catch up. Amen.